Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is National Association of Wheat Growers CEO Chandler Gould, who joins us to discuss the conflict in Ukraine and its impact on the U.S. wheat industry. But first, here's this week's headlines. President Joe Biden delivered his State of the Union address Tuesday and offered an agenda that includes sharp oversight of anti-competitive practices in meatpacking and ocean shipping. The speech came the same day that Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack told members of the National Farmers Union of the Agriculture Department's plans to explore the pricing practices of retailers and seed companies. USDA plans to issue a request for information on the subject in the next week. Highly pathogenic avian influenza is spreading across the country at an increasing rate. What began as a couple of wild bird infections in the Carolinas has now spread to at least 10 states, with new states like Iowa and Connecticut being added to the list this week alone. The outbreak represents the most significant series of detections since the outbreak that began in 2014 and would go on to result in the depopulation of about 50 million birds across more than 200 flocks in 15 states. Many of the reported detections have been in smaller backyard flocks rather than commercial operations, which has limited the scope of the outbreak thus far. The Department of Agriculture says no human cases of the disease have been detected, and the recent string of detections in birds does not pose an immediate public health concern. And finally, the Russian invasion of Ukraine is entering its second week. Russian forces have met bitter opposition from the Ukrainian military and its citizenry, and U.S. defense officials say the Kremlin's timeline has slowed as a result. Peace talks between the two countries have failed to produce a deal this week. American commodity markets have risen sharply higher in the last week as traders and producers alike seek to get a handle on the conflict's long-term impacts. National Association of Wheat Growers CEO Chandler Gould says that price volatility has the attention of U.S. wheat farmers.
Well, when you have the world's largest exporter, Russia, and the world's fifth largest exporter, Ukraine, which means they produce a third of the world's wheat production in a major conflict, we are already seeing volatile prices here in our domestic market. You know, last week we limited up and limited down. This week we have limited up several other times, and that volatility definitely leads to increased uncertainty, which makes it very difficult for our farmers to put together their business plan for the upcoming year.
Mm-hmm. So as we look at that business plan for the upcoming year, just last week we saw the Department of Agriculture say that they're expecting about 48 million acres of wheat grown in the United States this year. I know a lot of that crop has already been planted. Some is spring wheat that is either being planted now or is yet to be. But I guess my question is, does the conflict change at all that acreage figure, do you think?
It won't change any of the winter wheat because, as you already mentioned, it's already been planted. But what it could affect would be maybe an increase in spring wheat, depending on the price and moving forward. But I think there's a lot of other variable factors in there. As fertilizer and fuel also are going to increase more than they currently are because of this conflict. And with the rising cost of inputs, wheat is really becoming a much more desirable crop to go into the ground. And so I'm not sure exactly what the estimates will be for spring wheat, but I would not be surprised if they're not a little higher than they were last year. And of course, going back to many other factors, but the Russian and Ukraine conflict being one of them for sure.
Because I suppose you can't focus this solely on price, because heck, the corn price is going up quite a bit right now too. It's going to have to be some of those other factors that you mentioned.
Exactly. When you take in, and we'll go all the way back to the tariff wars and then COVID and then supply chain input costs. And we already had high fertilizer inflation, fuel. We expect fertilizer and fuel to go even higher because of the conflict. You continually add to that increased cost of production. And then when you look at, your margins, I think that will make wheat, spring wheat at least, a desirable product. But even though we're seeing these limit up prices right now, it's all being eaten up with this inflation and increased cost of production as from all those other elements that we just mentioned. So the farmers are still not making bank on this because cost of production has risen so quickly.
Obviously, we're in a situation that's changing minute by minute in Russia and Ukraine. But I think I can certainly make an educated guess here that they're going to have a hard time in some parts of Ukraine, especially planting their spring crops, given the ongoing conflict that we're seeing there. If those issues in Ukraine and other parts of the Black Sea region continue to, you know, pose an issue for planting their spring crop, is the American producer in a position to fill that gap on the worldwide market?
Well, you know, that's a very good question, Spencer. So, you know, I would say by the end of the month, early April, Ukraine is a winter wheat producing state. So all their wheat's already in the ground. So the question is really going to be, will the farmers be able to get to their fields? Will the roads and bridges be there where they can actually do their crop protection tools to help increase their yield? And right now, the way things are looking, the answer to that's most likely going to be no. So I'm anticipating that there's going to be a significant reduction in their production over there. Now, we ended the year last year with pretty high world stock, so the amount of wheat out there, I think, will take up a lot of that gap. As to whether or not Ukrainian customers like Egypt, Indonesia, Philippines, Turkey will turn to the U.S. is yet to be seen.
We'll be right back with more from Chandler, including his thoughts on what this all might mean for the U.S. consumer.
Farm Credit supports rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services in good times and bad. We provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. As cooperatives, we're locally owned and governed. We help agricultural producers feed the world. For America's farmers, Farm Credit, supporting rural communities and agriculture. Learn more today.
Welcome back. The recent increases that have been observed in the commodity markets have many speculating about what could happen to food prices as a result. Chandler's the first one to tell us that he's not an economist, but says that might be a good educated guess.
We're not a consumer products good organization here, and nor am I an economist. But when you look at all of those factors that you and I just discussed that are increasing the cost of production for wheat growers across all six of our classes, I think it's very safe to say that we should anticipate an increase in food prices. Now, how much? I am not in a position to actually answer that question. You know, I don't think bread is going to go up a dollar a loaf, but I think we should definitely anticipate increase in products, not only for wheat, but all commodities, just due to the overall increased cost of production for all those factors, and then the added issues of the invasion of Russia into Ukraine.
Well, and as we look at those food price increases that you mentioned, as we continue to see commodity prices just going up and up and up and up and up, does that concern you at all in the grand scheme? Obviously, high prices are good things for the American producer, but they also are potentially a bit of a tough road there for the American consumer. Any concerns that these continued increases in commodity prices might lead to exacerbating inflation and again that further impact of high food prices?
Well, I think definitely what we can consider is, you know, depending on how big and how long this invasion goes, the greater the impact will be, not only on the U.S. wheat producer, but also our consumer here. And look at this. The reason I keep talking about the price volatility is look how fast the price went up. Well, we also know when you've got uncertainty and basically what I would call a volatile market, the prices could come down just as fast as they went up. Now, that's I'm not saying that's what's definitely going to happen, but we can definitely that's definitely a possibility that is out there. But overall, at the end, someone has to make up for that cost of production, and then it's most likely going to be passed to the farmer for the cost of their input services and to the consumer for the increased cost of production of their food products.
I mean, I know it's hard to think about public relations at a time like this, but do you worry at all about the PR concerns about the American farmer receiving more for their cost or more for their wheat while at the same time the consumer is being asked to pay more? Is this potentially a PR problem for NOG and the rest of the wheat industry?
I don't think so as of right now. I mean, the whole world, and as you saw, you know, at the State of the Union, we had Democrats and Republicans standing up and supporting the president and supporting the Ukrainian people. You know, if it's tied back to that, I think that we will be able to move forward. But if this is going to be prolonged for 6 months, a year, 2 years, if we continue to have inflation in these high input prices and things along those lines, then I think we will need to do an education campaign of why food has gone up. And then, of course, depending on what the USDA and the administration do to tackle inflation, of course, they've also talked about releasing the 30 or 40 million barrels of oil to help with the fuel price. So, I mean, I think this is definitely on everybody's radar screen, but I don't think we're to a PR crisis yet. Everybody's very aware of the international situation that's affecting all of us across commodities and all other goods.
Well, you say across commodities, NOG is one of the groups that's going to be gathering in New Orleans next week for the Commodity Classic, along with corn, sorghum, and soybeans, as well as the equipment manufacturers. But I mentioned that because that meeting is usually a place where the commodity groups like NOG and the others will set kind of some upcoming priorities for the rest of the year. Wondering how does the invasion of Ukraine, the resulting price volatility that we're seeing, how does that impact kind of the priority issues that we can expect to see NOG pursue here in the rest of the year?
Well, so as you mentioned, normally at Commodity Classic, especially at this Commodity Classic, when we're going to start working on our Farm Bill 23 priorities. But in talking to our colleagues over at corn and soy and sorghum, normally we would come out in March, April with our Farm Bill priorities, but I really think that's going to be pushed more to June and July this year as both of the Senate and House Ag Committees are starting to gear up for their Farm Bill hearings. We've got a little more time there, but I would not be surprised at all if next week, if we don't have some broader conversations on the World Food Program, food aid, and what we can do to bring some relief to the Ukrainian citizens that are basically, one of the articles I read yesterday, they're already trying to ship more wheat into Kiev for their milling capabilities to make bread because the stores are literally running out of food there. And so I think there'll be a major push for what can we do as the United States to those programs along with our allies.
Mm-hmm. I want to circle back to the Farm Bill point that you made because, you know, obviously we haven't seen the House and Senate Ag Committees exactly come off to a roaring start with their oversight here at the beginning of 22. There have been hearings, but they did take a little bit to get into those hearings. Are commodity groups ready to roll out their Farm Bill priorities, or is this strictly a matter of giving the congressional oversight a little bit more time to work with?
So we were talking about this again, like I said, with corn and soy and sorghum. I think it really will be the summer timeframe, I think, before we roll those out. And, you know, we want to see what the chair and the ranking member of the Senate and the House Ag Committee, kind of what their priorities are going to be. We want to see those hearings started up so we can see what other groups are saying. So we can see where do we need to put the most emphasis and where do we need to do the most education on the priorities that are the best for the U.S. wheat growers. So I do anticipate that we'll have that prepared by the summer, but we'd really like to see kind of what the agenda items are going to be for the four principles on the Senate and House Ag Committee. So that helps guide us as well. Not that their principles come into us, but it lets us know where to prioritize our ask in the Farm Bill by knowing what the priorities of those principles will be. So it's kind of working in tandem on the same schedule and timeline, but I look forward to having something more comprehensive later this year.
Chandler, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity. Enjoy being on your show.
We'll be right back to discuss the week's news with our panel. But first, Hannah Pagel has a look at rural broadband funding in this week's Map It Out.
If you have a landline, you may have noticed a note about the Universal Service Fund on your bill. But do you know what the USF does? The USF was initially established to help subsidize and build out telephone services to rural areas. But now that fund has shifted to constructing broadband networks in farm country and other communities with limited high-speed internet. On this AgriPulse map, you can see most of the broadband projects have taken place on the eastern side of the United States. The dark blue areas represent states that received more funding, and the light green areas represent states that received less. Currently, the USF has $9 billion in its account, and it slowly keeps decreasing due to a lack of revenue coming in. The main source of revenue was a surcharge on individuals who have a landline, but more and more people have dropped their landline over the years. Fewer landlines mean less money for the USF. The Federal Communications Commission is looking to reform the USF and restabilize its funding, but rural policymakers and the largest broadband providers are split over who should be footing the bill. Garrett Downs has more on this topic and an interactive version of this map in his story on AgriPulse.com. For this week's Map It Out, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers. Happy to be joined this week by an outstanding panel to discuss really a wide range of international trade issues, and I want to bring them in here now. Really excited to have the guests that we have this week. Of course, Phil Carsing of now with OFW Law and a former administrator of USDA's Foreign Agricultural Service. I also have Maria Ziba with the National Pork Producers Council. And rounding things out is Greg Dowd with Aimpoint Research and formerly of the Trump administration as the Chief Agricultural Negotiator at the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative. A powerhouse panel to discuss really an important set of issues as we're dealing with international trade. And Phil, I want to go to you first. In your capacity with FAS, as we have seen some conflicts, international trade being looped in with global conflict is nothing new. But I am curious if you could take us inside the offices of FAS, of USDA, when a new conflict arises that is going to have an impact on U.S. agricultural trade, what are the conversations like and what are the steps that are typically taken?
Well, this is obviously a much bigger impact because, Ukraine is such a breadbasket for that part of the world. All in the lead up to this, I'm sure that a lot of information and data and information is being fed up through people at post. One of the strengths of FAS is that they've got people in a lot of different posts around the country where they can get real on the ground information and intel that gets fed up through FAS, through the Secretary's office, and in through the White House for the sub-cabinet meetings as well. So it's a pretty, I think, comprehensive information gathering process that we can be proud of as Americans.
So that's on the government side, but I want to shift a little bit to the private sector side. And Maria, I'll bring you into the fold here. I know it's not an apples to apples comparison to compare the conflict in Ukraine and its impact on, for instance, the wheat industry in the United States with the conflict or the trade disputes with China and its impact that that had on the pork industry. But what were the conversations like in the early days as the industry was trying to grapple and sort of get a hold on what this all meant for the American pork producer?
Well, looking back at the trade retaliation that we faced a few years ago and continue to face in China specifically, we went from a 72% tariff into the Chinese market, and now we're at 37%. And that really put us at a disadvantage at a time where China really needed a lot of pork and pork products because of the ongoing ASF crisis. But it's really depressed some of our exports to the Chinese market. Similarly, when we had conflicts with Mexico and that 20% duty there, it also depressed our exports significantly to then our largest volume market. And so we'll see what this brings with the conflict in Ukraine. There are some key markets where, for example, Vietnam, we are really interested in, and Russia is a top supplier of pork to Vietnam. And perhaps this will create an opportunity for us in such a tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Greg, I want to bring you into the fold here because obviously it seems like it's really, really tough these days to separate geopolitics from American agricultural trade. We've seen the retaliatory tariffs, like Maria just mentioned, get brought into the fold before. But I wonder, is it possible at all to divorce global geopolitics from American agricultural trade? Do you think the two are just going to be forever linked?
Well, I don't know about the global geopolitics of this, but I see this in three phases and steps. Number one, the Ukrainian Navy has mined the port of Odessa and their ports to keep the Russians from destroying the ports. These are major ports. The Ukrainians export half as much corn to the world as we do. They export more wheat than the United States does. This is a major supply of grain for the world. No one wants to touch Russian wheat right now. You have the SWIFT implications. No self-respecting vessel owner anywhere in the world is going anywhere near the Black Sea. So the discussions with regard to particularly the wheat, corn, and vegetable oil markets in the world, this is one of the most disruptive things maybe in my career that we've seen. So and the implications of this are day to day.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
It takes a seed to grow. That simple idea inspires and informs the team at marketing, communications, and consulting agency, Curious Plot. Our 2022 Seed to Succeed Pro Bono Grant Program will offer $75,000 worth of in-kind services to a nonprofit organization in the agriculture, food, or animal care markets. Organization nominations are accepted until close of business on March 18th. Learn more at curiousplot.agency.
Welcome back. While the impact of the Russian invasion of Ukraine is most evident in the Black Sea region, our panel believes the impact will soon be felt around the world and suggests steps that could be taken here in the United States as a result.
The public perception of U.S. ag exports today is of the highest regard with regard to food safety, first and foremost. Everybody respects that. Great conversations with China with to that regard. The issue is really price. I mean, everybody, and let's talk about the wheat market for a minute. I'm an old wheat guy. The United States is the world's residual supplier of wheat. You've heard that a million times. And the answer is we've got plenty of wheat in stocks right now, but it's at a price. And the question is it at a price that people can afford in places like Egypt? Egypt is the biggest wheat buyer in the world. They'll go to India, they'll go to Romania, they'll go to Germany, they'll go to France, they'll go to all kinds of places to find the cheapest wheat in the world for what they do. We've got the wheat, but it's going to be expensive. I don't think there's any question about it.
Mm-hmm. Phil, I want to bring you back into the fold here because given your experience on Capitol Hill, your experience at USDA, I wonder domestically this, you know, we're seeing a big surge in commodity prices. I think it's an educated guess to say there could be a corresponding jump to come in terms of food prices. But I wonder domestically, is there anything that needs to be done at USDA on Capitol Hill to mitigate the impacts of this on American consumers, but also to provide relief for consumers around the world, including those that might be seeking to evacuate Ukraine?
Well, there's a lot of things going on right now. I think just learned last night, WFP, a World Food Program, is shipping about 400 tons from stockpiles in Turkey to the border on Ukraine with Poland and Moldova, or Poland and Romania right now, maybe Slovakia and Moldova later on. And so I think there's going to be a sort of a global concerted effort to try to address the challenges here. What this portends for us at home, I mean, it remains to be seen. This is just a lot of volatility. And, you know, it can all be traced back to a war of choice by Vladimir Putin. And so we're going to be thrown a big wrench. I would say also that when prices get really volatile, we have a little more residual ability to deal with that here in the United States. In a lot of super poor countries, they don't. Look at places in the Middle East, North Africa. It can be a lot more devastating to some of their food supplies. We have a little more resiliency here in the United States.
Well, and Maria, bringing you back in here, we've seen the U.S. pork sector become sort of collateral damage in trade discussions before. But wondering, you mentioned the possibility for additional exports to Vietnam, given the Russians potentially coming out of that market by a little bit. But wondering, is the U.S. pork industry bracing at all for potential higher input costs, be it higher higher cost of corn, things of that nature, as a result of this conflict and any potential impacts that could have on U.S. pork exports?
Well, our industry certainly has faced a number of higher input costs, and that's why we saw our prices of pork and the CPI jump 15% from the year before. And according to USDA estimates, we're likely to see 3-4% further increase of U.S. Prices of pork at the grocery store this year. It all comes down to higher inputs, whether that's on the feed side. We're also facing major labor shortages, not only on farm, but at packing plants. And all those really feed into higher prices for consumers. And it really starts with the inputs, but also can be directly tied to the shipping and export crisis and the delays of inputs and getting vessels offloaded at the West Coast ports and U.S. agricultural goods exported out. So it's a big shift and impact for our producers, and it's unfortunately going to likely impact consumers in the United States and abroad.
So obviously big impacts that we're watching for in terms of things that will impact the American producer, the global producer, as well as the global producer and consumer, as we all look to get a handle on the long-term impacts and the short-term impacts, really, of this Russian invasion of Ukraine. Phil, Greg, Maria, appreciate you all joining us. We'll be right back, but first, our Hannah Pegel explores some crop insurance figures in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Surging commodity prices have pushed crop insurance guarantees to record highs this spring. That means more risk protection for growers. But higher insurance guarantees also come with a cost. Better commodity prices mean farmers will also pay larger premiums to cover higher risk. The insurance price released Tuesday for corn grown in the Midwest and Plain states will be $5.90 per bushel this year, up from $4.58 a year ago and less than $4 in 2020. Farmers in southern states will see a somewhat lower insurance price of $5.75 per bushel due to USDA's price discovery period being earlier in the year. The insurance price for Midwest-grown soybeans is $14.33 per bushel, well above the high of $13.49 in 2011. The soybean price was $11.87 just a year ago and $9.17 for 2020. Interested in learning what this means for farm policy? Check out Phil Brasher's story on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pegel.
Join us for the 2022 AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit. Speakers will discuss the groundwork for the next Farm Bill on March 21st at the National Press Club and through our virtual experience. Register today under the Events tab at AgriPulse.com.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the week to come. Lawmakers have until Friday the 11th to come to an agreement on government funding for the rest of the fiscal year or to pass another continuing resolution to move the deadline into the future. Absent any action, the government would face a shutdown at the end of next week. The House Agriculture Committee will continue its Farm Bill review with a subcommittee examination of its rural development language. And corn, soybean, wheat, and sorghum producers from across the country, as well as equipment manufacturers, will be in New Orleans next week for the annual Commodity Classic. I'll be there, and so will Sarah Wyant, Bill Thompson, and other members of the AgriPulse team. Phil Brasher will be filling in for me on next week's show. As always, stay tuned to AgriPulse.com for the latest developments in ag and food policy. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit agripulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.